listen and welcome to CBS Mornings On The Go. Ahead on this Friday, July 17th, it is time for a reality check. Last night, President Trump gave a primetime address on the subject of election security. He believes there are vulnerabilities. We will get into what is real and what is not with nonpartisan election expert David Becker. Plus, we've got some very big stories today on your health. Dr. John LaPook will tell us about a promising new treatment for high cholesterol. And Dr. Tara Sharazian shares important information on a painful condition affecting most women. She says, do not suffer in silence. And he's been called one of the greatest athletes of all time, period. Gail has a very personal conversation with tennis superstar Novak Djokovic. All that and more ahead.
We're going to begin this hour with dangerous smoke in the sky for millions of Americans. You look up and you see it. It's not good. It's from hundreds of wildfires raging in Canada right now, and it's unhealthy to breathe. So you can see the milky white haze has descended on Detroit. In Chicago, there the sky glowed orange. CBS News meteorologist Rob Marciano is tracking all of this right here in New York. Rob, the air here isn't so good either. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Yeah, it's not so good. A little bit better than it was yesterday afternoon. Yeah, at least you can see the George Washington Bridge behind me, but still considered to be unhealthy here in New York. Very unhealthy in some other places. Hazardous in Detroit and Chicago. Check this out. Those are two of the most polluted or the air quality index. It's the highest in the world. Detroit, Chicago, D.C., you're next. Toronto, and there's New York City. As far as the AQI, just a reminder, anything below 50 is good. Up to 100 is not so good. Over 100 is unhealthy for certain people. Over 150, which is where we've been pretty much all week, unhealthy for everybody. Hazardous, which is Chicago, Detroit, do not go outside without a mask. All right, we do have a front that's going to kind of be influencing some of this smoke, pushing it down to the south today. Baltimore, D.C., Pittsburgh, you're going to be getting it, and then kind of pushing it north tomorrow back into New York, and then maybe another surge behind that front coming to Chicago Saturday and Sunday. All right, let's talk flooding. Check out this video in Kerrville, Texas. Kerr County, parts of it got 2 feet of rainfall there. Some folks there having to get rescued, and in some cases getting into their house and the water rising in their house, having to be rescued in the attic of their house. Scary times for sure. There you see the rescuers. As far as how much more is coming, we still have flash flood watches and warnings now, but we will see less rain today, and it will be turning off the spigot, at least for now, come tomorrow. Nate, back over to you.
All right, Rob, thank you.
President Trump billed his primetime speech last night as a really big news on the subject of election integrity. The president accused China of trying to collect voter data and repeated disproven claims about voting by non-citizens. Democrats fear it's part of an effort to undermine confidence in elections, with the midterms just months away. Weijia Jiang is at the White House with more. Weijia, good morning.
Good morning, Joe, and good morning to everybody. President Trump used his remarks last night to make exaggerated and at times unsubstantiated claims about election security, all while he's calling on Congress to pass a voting regulations bill ahead of those midterm elections.
Our elections were left vulnerable to being rigged and stolen.
During his primetime address last night, President Trump doubled down on unsubstantiated claims the 2020 presidential election, which he lost, was rigged, and he accused China of accessing voter data,
resulting in China's illicit acquisition of 220 million U.S. voter files. That information includes names, addresses, phone numbers.
Most of that information is publicly available, and Trump did not say how or if Beijing used it. Though the U.S. intelligence community assessed in 2021 with high confidence that China did not try to influence the outcome of the 2020 election. And in a statement, China said it has never and will never interfere in the presidential elections of the U.S. Trump accused the deep state of covering up the truth.
Those responsible for sounding the alarm instead kept the information secret and hidden.
However, another intelligence assessment from April 2020 during the first Trump administration did raise the alarm that Chinese officials had analyzed bulk voter registration data from multiple U.S. states. And this:
hundreds of thousands of non-citizens and dead people are listed and active on the voter rolls.
The president raised concern about undocumented immigrants voting, claiming without presenting clear evidence to back it up, that DHS found 278,000 non-citizens on voting rolls nationwide. And he used that claim to again push lawmakers to pass a voting regulations bill that would establish national voter ID, proof of citizenship standards, and dramatically curb mail-in voting.
Congress must pass the Save America Act.
Democrats warn Trump is using the past to sow doubts about the upcoming midterm elections.
He's laying the groundwork for a potential challenge to the result. Another bad faith challenge.
President Trump says the administration is notifying states whose voter data they consider compromised by China, along with information about non-citizens on their voter rolls. Jo-Ling.
Weijia, thank you. Joining us now to break this all down is CBS News election law contributor David Becker. He's also the executive director and founder of the Nonpartisan Center for Election Innovation and Research. Good morning. There is a lot going on in our country right now. We've got wars, inflation. Why did the president give this primetime address largely discussing debunked claims about election integrity?
Boy, that's the big question, isn't it? I can't really answer that question, because if you look at the evidence that was actually presented last night, that this administration has compiled over 18 months in total control of the federal government using all of the resources of the intelligence community, the Department of Justice, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, looking for evidence that would justify or support the false claims that the 2020 election was stolen. In fact, what was released last night largely confirmed that that election was secure. Mm-hmm. It confirmed that there was no alteration of the vote totals. There was nothing done that would have affected those vote totals. And while there's these claims of this cover-up that occurred, if you actually look back, almost all of this was known and publicly reported during 2020, during the Trump administration. A reminder that President Trump was actually the president in 2020 who was charged with protecting our infrastructure, charged with protecting us from foreign interference.
David, I want to ask you about how the president has claimed that China has collected the voter data of 220 million Americans. Should we be worried here? What is the reality?
The reality, as you just heard, is voter data is public. Every state allows for public versions of the voter data to be available. The parties use it, the candidates use it for outreach, for voter engagement. It's also good for people who want our elections to have integrity, because voter lists can be checked ahead of time to see if there are any problems with them, perhaps to challenge individual voters who might not be eligible, who might have moved away, et cetera. So every state has this publicly. There are states like Ohio and North Carolina that literally have it up on the web right now. You can go and find that if you just Google it. It's been long known that China is vacuuming up as much data on Americans as possible. This is probably some of the easiest data and the least concerning data that they could possibly have. There's no personally identifiable information in this. This is just the public files, and nothing that we heard last night changes that, and no one should be concerned about that.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you, David, because the president has called this, quote, an unprecedented election security nightmare. So bottom line it for us, how secure do you think our structure is, and should Americans be worried when we go to the polls in November?
Our system's as secure as it's ever been, Gail. It's always improving. We should always have these discussions about how to improve our election system. But for instance, he raised unsubstantiated claims about our voting machines. And the fact is, our voting machines are technology. We need technology to count our very complicated ballots very fast. We want that to happen. But we do not trust that technology. And voting machines, unlike other technology, have a variety of mitigation and resilience measures. They're kept under lock and key. They're tested regularly. And there's the paper ballots in every state except for Louisiana. Those ballots are audited by hand to confirm the machine counts were accurate.
All right, David Becker, thank you so much. In this morning's Health Watch, what some are calling a breakthrough for people at risk for heart disease due to high cholesterol. The FDA has just approved a pill form of a powerful class of medication that targets the bad LDL cholesterol. Chief Medical Correspondent Dr. John LaPook is here to give us all the details.
Morning.
John, always good, of course, to have you here. You know, this drug is already available as an injectable.
Right.
So is it pill form better or just easier?
I think it's just easier.
Easier.
It could possibly be a little cheaper depending upon what the other companies do. But this is Lipfendra, and it's a PCSK9 inhibitor. What is that?
Yeah.
That's a very powerful class of medicines that removes LDL, that's the bad cholesterol, from the bloodstream, kind of sopping it up by the liver. Now, that's different than the statins, which, by the way, are much cheaper. They've been around for a long time, especially in the generic form. They work by stopping the cholesterol manufacturing that occurs in the liver. But normally, right now, you know, if you want to lower your cholesterol, you're probably going to be on some form of a statin.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, if it doesn't get it down low enough, you might take a pill called ezetimibe or Zetia. That decreases absorption of cholesterol, gets it down a little more. But if you're still not at goal where you want to be, these are very powerful and important drugs.
What do we know about the safety of these pills? And like, what can you rely on? Can you have that peace of mind?
Well, you know, in about a year study of a little over 3,000 people, the safety signals were about the same with placebo. You could have a little diarrhea, a little dizziness, but so far it seems safe. But, you know, 3,000 people as opposed to millions of people, and it's for a year. So we're going to see over time. It's going to be watched very carefully. Of course, we know with the statins, some people can't take it, right? They can get some muscle aches. And interestingly enough, if you get muscle aches and cramps with one class or one type of a statin, often you can switch it to another brand and it can go away. But this just gives you another tool.
Another option.
I'm on that Repatha. I hate the needle, those needle injections. Is this better than that?
It gives you about the same reduction, right? Oh. Repatha, you have to take every 2 weeks. Of course, these days, everybody and their mother is doing some sort of a injection, right, with the GLP-1s.
Yeah. Right.
Really not so hard, right? There's like a sting. It's every 2 weeks. And that has
easy
to be
for you to say.
What's
you know,
another needle?
It has to. Well, I've used self-injection needles in the fair. That's not nothing. Nobody likes it. But you know, it also doesn't have to be refrigerated. It may be easier to travel with. But look, the best medication is the one that you actually take, and it gives people another option. And well, it remains to be seen if people are going to take medications that they need to get that LDL down to, sometimes it has to be as low as 70 or if you have heart disease, or even 55 now. So it's kind of be hard to get to those targets. And this is another new
one. All in all, this is big news.
Yeah,
good news.
Big news. All right, Dr. John LaPoupe, thank you.
Time for a look at the stories that caught our eye. And the lovely Adriana Diaz is in position. Hello.
Hello, everyone.
Good morning. Said Mrs. Smith.
But Mrs. Smith. I'm also Mrs. Smith.
Yes.
Very proud
Hello,
to be
Mrs. Smith.
Good morning. Good morning. So we begin with a massive water main break that left a busy part of a Los Angeles street underwater. Take a look at this. Officials say it happened Thursday after a 36-inch pipe. That is huge. Burst under the famed Sunset Boulevard. Apparently, the pipe is 110 years old. So, you know. Not that surprising. The flood also caused a sinkhole. The water main has been switched off, but streets in the affected area do remain closed. And take a look at this. A Texas police officer is being called a hero after saving a driver from a burning car. Watch this. You can see the car burst into flames on the side of the highway. Corporal Joshua Swisher rushes over, pulls the door handle, which snaps off, and without hesitation, he breaks the window, pulling the driver to safety.
Wow.
Thankfully, the driver escaped without serious injuries. I mean, law enforcement, so brave.
He knew what to do right there.
Yeah, he was quick. And finally, superstar Adam Sandler called the police on a recent vacation less than 48 hours after officiating Taylor Swift and Travis Kelce's wedding. But don't worry, he's fine. He's okay. Sandler called the Nantucket non-emergency police line with a question that's totally on brand.
I'm visiting your island right now, and I was wondering if you could answer a question. I like to play basketball. Is there any outdoor courts where people play?
Off the top of my head, there's only one I can think of that's outside, and I'm not even sure if it's available to the public right now, but it's behind the Muse on Bacchus Lane.
Okay, thank you. I'll check it out.
And check it out, he did. So one of the other players who was there, because he just joined a game, they described Sandler's game like this to a local paper, saying, quote, great passing and playmaking, decent layups, hesitated, shouldn't be
a call. He's a team player.
Kept it real.
He's a team player.
But isn't that amazing?
Yes, I love that.
Reason to love him.
But I love that he just called the police station and said, hey, I'm here. Where can I go play basketball?
Exactly. Yeah. He's a real hooper.
Yeah.
He really is. Adriana, thank you. Now to the latest allegations of insider betting on Kelce. This time it's from inside the White House, allegedly. Last night, President Trump's usual teleprompter operator, Gabriel Perez, he was not on the job because officials say he bet on the words Trump would use in speeches, making money on his advanced knowledge of what the president would say. It's the latest scandal involving prediction markets where users can gamble on almost anything.
from trade to health care, from energy.
Ahead of President Donald Trump's State of the Union address this past February, traders on the prediction market platform Kalshi took bets on the words he might say.
I am officially announcing the war on fraud to be
like fraud and nuclear. Now, Kalshi alleges one of those traders, Gabriel Perez, the president's longtime teleprompter operator, engaged in insider trading.
I have a guy, Gabe. He's excellent.
According to Kalshi, Perez, seen here, allegedly used his knowledge of more than a dozen of Trump's speeches to win more than $100,000. Kalshi says it began investigating in March after its surveillance systems detected trades that did not adhere to typical buying and selling patterns. In a statement, the company said it flagged and referred these trades to the Commodity Futures Trading Commission, the federal agency that regulates prediction markets.
That insider trader isn't just the person on Wall Street anymore.
Kristen Johnson is a former CFTC commissioner under Presidents Joe Biden and Trump.
Where there are violations of insider trading laws that raise these types of red flags and trigger alarms, it's important for there to be prompt investigations and swift enforcement.
Kalshi says it froze $90,000 of the $100,000 that Perez made.
He believes it's deeply unfortunate and frankly a disgrace.
Ed O'Keefe pressed the White House on the situation Thursday.
What steps is the White House taking to ensure something like that doesn't happen again?
Well, the White House has extremely strict ethical guidelines with respect to issues like this. And as I just told you, this individual will no longer be here. The administrative leave is unpaid, to be very clear. That was a decision by the president.
A source familiar with the matter also tells CBS News that Perez is currently in talks with agency regulators for a potential settlement. And CBS News has reached out to Perez, but he did not return our requests for comment, guys. Now,
something tells me he's going to be unavailable for quite some time. Yeah. But I thought the commissioner made a good point. It's insider trading is no longer these Wall Street guys anymore. We see, quote, regular people doing it, too. And Ed asked a very good question.
Oh, yeah.
What's being done to
stop
it?
What's being done?
Well, yeah. There's a couple of things that are being done. Kalshi, Polymarket, these platforms say that they are doing more to try to curb this and figure out this insider trading problem that they clearly have. And then there's some proposed legislation in play. Then you've got the courts doing their work, right? The guy who was caught on the Maduro trade has been charged. He's pleaded not guilty there. So you see it winding through the courts as well. But this is a problem because if you're an average bettor, say you're just putting down like $5-$10 here or there, if you know this is maybe not a level playing field, are you going to participate? What happens to the business of these companies that are trying to grow?
Yeah. Exactly. And these markets and platforms are so new.
They're so
new. Like everybody's playing catch up.
And right. Everyone knows a little something or something.
That's right.
All right. We'll see what happens. We'll see.
What do you know, Jolene? I'm open.
Well, whatever you know, don't bet on it. That's for sure.
Coming up next, we're talking with the tennis legend. He's a GOAT, Novak Djokovic.
It's a medical condition affecting more than 26 million premenopausal women in the U.S. Uterine fibroids are non-cancerous tumors that develop in the muscle of the uterus. If left untreated, they can cause serious health problems, including fertility issues and disorders like anemia. Dr. Tara Shirazian is the director of the Center for Fibroid Care at NYU Langone Health. She and her team have created new educational videos to help guide other doctors through conversations on the disease. That includes how to help patients make sense of what they've found on social media. Listen to this.
And I was also looking at some TikTok videos that talked about supplements or herbs that could help either reduce symptoms or reduce the size. So I wanted to see what you thought about that too.
Yeah, I get this question a lot because I think women are out there doing research and they're out looking at health information. And so there are some supplements that are anti-inflammatory that could have properties that help limit inflammation and might overall help your symptoms. So I do.
Dr. Shirazian, welcome. We're so glad you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you make these videos for other doctors?
Yes. Well, so we already educate patients a lot around fibroid disease, or at least I've been making a real effort in this space to educate patients. But we want to improve the dialogue. We want to improve the options. So half of that are the physicians themselves, are the providers of healthcare. So we want to make sure that doctors and providers, NPs, emergency doctors, all of them feel comfortable counseling women around fibroids, offering them all the options or referring them when appropriate.
You know, starting this conversation can be really hard. So many of my friends have discovered it and then not known
where to turn. How do I, as the patient, start the conversation? What's your recommendation?
Yes. So I really recommend that patients educate themselves, especially around options. So making sure you understand what options exist, and you can find that education online, you know, at my Instagram or, you know, in many portals online. So I think that when patients are educated, they can come to the doctor saying, am I a good candidate for radio frequency ablation? Am I a good candidate for a medication? Should I have a surgery? Mm-hmm. How are we going to watch these fibroids when they're small? What can I do to prevent new fibroids? So I think asking all of these questions is really important, but it starts with knowing what that playing field of options are.
I'm curious about what are some of the symptoms and how open are doctors to these videos? Because it's been my experience, doctors think they have the information. Mm. They say get a second opinion, but many times they're kind of annoyed if you do.
Right.
So how open are they to a video just for them?
Yes. So these videos will be CME accredited. So they will get CME credits, which every doctor needs every year, through NYU in this first year. So if people want to watch the videos and get CME accredited for it, they can. So that's hopefully an incentive for some. But I think, you know, I think the goal is just to give them these options and sort of see who uses them, who takes it up, you know, how they use them. Okay. Obviously, we can't, you know, make everyone counsel in the same way. Mm-hmm. But I think opening up this idea that improved counseling will help their doctor-patient mm-hmm. relationships is really, really important. And 3.2 billion women are affected by fibroids globally.
That's right. Yeah.
80% of the globe. So this is an issue that affects every doctor and most patients. So, yeah.
Yeah. Real quick, what can we do? Spousal support when it comes
yes.
to showing up for our significant others.
I love that question. So I'm a surgeon, so I take out fibroids, I remove them surgically. And I'm always amazed that when we take a picture of it, I've had partners that cry visibly yeah. when they see these images. Yeah. Like, this is what my wife or girlfriend was going
dealing
through.
With.
I can't believe it. So I think educating on what fibroids are, educating the men, making sure they understand, bringing them in on the conversation is very, very important.
All right, Dr. Sarazian, thank you so much. Tennis legend Novak Djokovic is one of the world's greatest athletes of all time. Listen to his numbers. He holds a whole lot of records, including 24 Grand Slam singles titles, the most ever, an astonishing 428 weeks ranked as number one in men's singles. Wow. A new documentary, it's coming out next month, is going to take us behind the scenes of his life and his career. It's called Novak Djokovic, The Wolf in Winter. Here's an exclusive clip.
Oftentimes I feel that I am imprisoning myself. In order for you to thrive and to be at the maximum of your abilities, you have to literally transform every part of your life outside of the tennis court to be in service to the tennis court. And that has consequences.
We are very excited to say that Novak Djokovic, a GOAT, is in the building today. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you, too.
You've just come from Wimbledon, getting ready for the U.S. Open in New York next month. But I want to go back a little bit about when you first started with this sport, because I was surprised to learn that tennis wasn't a natural fit for you because you come from a family of skiers.
I do. I do come from a family of professional skiers. I was 4 years of age and I started playing tennis. No one has touched the racket in my family, extended family, ever before. We don't have a tennis tradition in Serbia. We didn't have it to that point. And then I, you know, I was interested in what's this sport. And then I fell in love. I asked my dad to buy me a racket. And that's how the whole love story with tennis started.
But the people close to you say this about you, that tennis is a safe space for you, a place where you find love, a place where you show all of your emotions on the court. Because, you know, we've seen many different sides of Novak on the court.
Indeed, because I would connect it to my childhood, my upbringing, war-torn country, several wars during 90s, embargo, sanctions, economical crisis, social crisis, you know, crisis of every kind. I mean, I chose the most expensive sport, and my parents wanted to support me, and I have two younger brothers, and they also wanted to play tennis, and they really didn't receive the kind of resourceful support that I was getting. And, mm-hmm. you know, my parents felt bad about it, but that's the kind of a time that they had to make a choice. And so I made an oath to myself that I'm going to repay my parents and my brothers that they have the best life possible.
But here we are in 2026, because all that work that you did has led to where you are now. You've just come back from Wimbledon, and I just want to talk about that, the match in the quarterfinals, where you played over 5 hours and 15 minutes. I was just in awe of you that night, and I wonder, do you think about your age at 39? Is it something you think about when you're still playing at the level that you're playing?
Well, I am thinking about playing great tennis, and really, if I'm not thinking about it, then people remind me. If the people don't remind me of my age, then my body reminds me of my age.
Yeah.
And you're just trying to take every percentage of extra edge that I can get to be able to still compete at an elite level with young guys, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, the body is responding differently, and that's just biology. You know, the wear and tear of the 20 plus years on the highest level is just taking its toll, so it takes more time for me to recover. So after that 5 hour, 15 minute quarterfinals, you know, I just couldn't fully recover for the semis, and I wasn't as fresh as I wanted to be, mm-hmm. but not to take anything away from Sinner, who won and won the tournament, but it's different nowadays.
What are you looking forward most in the U.S. Open next month in New York City? Who's going to be your biggest competition?
Myself, always. U.S. Open is one of the four slams. It's the most, I think, entertaining, most exciting Grand Slam. The biggest stadium in our sport, Arthur Ashe.
Mm-hmm.
Can't wait. One of the biggest things of why I still compete is the energy of the crowd.
Yes.
And the appreciation and respect that I've been getting, particularly in the last several years around the world, is something I cannot thank people enough. It matters a lot to me.
What is it about your children and your wife that also sustains you when times get tough and just keeps you at the top of your game?
My wife has been a rock.
Yep.
She has been so supportive. It would be very difficult for me to do what I do, still be able to do what I do, without her support and her keeping the whole household. And also emotionally dealing with our children. And after I leave them and the absence, missing out on some important dates and events in their life, it's hard. And she continues to support me to live my dream.
Mm-hmm.
But I also want to balance it out now. That's why I don't play as much as I used to, because I want to be the best husband, father, brother, son that I can possibly be.
Before you go, I wanted to talk about how you talked about Serena. When Serena came back at Wimbledon, it didn't go the way that she planned, and there was all this, you said what about that?
Let's enjoy and celebrate who she is, what she has achieved. What she's doing now, after having two children, and after being away from professional tennis for so many years, is a gift for us, for anyone who loves tennis, for anyone who loves sport, for anyone who admires Serena and her legacy. And whatever happens, I mean, like, it doesn't matter if she wins or loses. It's already epic. It's what I told her personally in Wimbledon, and it's what I truly, honestly feel in my heart. So I want her to feel happy and joyful on the court, because in a sense, to some extent, I know how it feels, still trying to push at that age when you have achieved everything that you possibly can. But just looking at her being on the court is already sight for the eyes. So, I wish her all the best.
Yep, let's appreciate the greatness. We were all hoping that she comes to the U.S. Open, because, like yourself, she is a GOAT. Do you feel at this stage you still have something to prove?
I do. I mean, there's always something to prove to myself primarily and to others, but, you know, to myself, that I can always be better than I was yesterday.
Okay. I feel that too. I can always be better than I was yesterday. We thank you. We are cheering you on always. I can't
appreciate
wait to
it.
See you on the court next month.
Thank you so much.
I will be there.
Ahead, talk of the table, plus Adriana talks with Matt Damon and Anne Hathaway about the epic film, The Odyssey. Stick around. We will be right back.
Better than I ever did.
It is that time of the morning where we are going to give you some stories that are the talk of the table. And Gail, it's on you. What do you got?
We are ready. My talk of the table is some big news about powerhouse super duper producer, talking about the lovely director Ava DuVernay, who's been working on a new documentary for Netflix. I can't wait. It's titled 14th and looks at the 14th Amendment, which, as we know, gave liberty and rights to formerly enslaved people after the Civil War. So those rights included birthright citizenship, which has come under fire from President Trump. 14th follows DuVernay's blockbuster 2016 film, 13th, that looked at the legacy of the 13th Amendment, which we also know abolished slavery. When asked about this new doc, Ava DuVernay says this: if 13th asks who gets caged, then the 14th asks who gets counted. She also said this, Ava always has a way with words. Mm-hmm. This is not a film about the past tense of freedom. I am not interested in asking you to look back. This film asks what kind of country is being written beneath our feet now while we're busy believing the stories we've all been told. I think she sort of sums it up very brilliantly. I can't wait to see it. It's coming out on Netflix later this year.
You know, there's so many things I love about Ava DuVernay.
Yes.
One, her intelligence, her beauty, her grace that she walks into every room with.
Yes. Exactly right.
But most importantly, her intentionality behind the projects that she chooses. She can do anything.
Exactly.
But she chooses to work on things that matter and will make an impact.
And we need this documentary now more
at
than
this
ever.
Time. That's what
right
I was thinking.
Now, the timing is incredible.
You're so right about that. She's been working on it for a couple of years, so it's so interesting that it's coming out at this time with all that's happening in our country. Go Ava DuVernay. I can't wait
to see it. No doubt. Jolene, what do you got?
For my talk at the table, get ready for this. Apparently, we are in the middle of what's being called a literacy crisis. That's not surprising to me here. This comes from an article.
You can read, Jolene. You can read.
But am I reading is the question, right? This is an article from The Atlantic with the headline, "The End of Reading is Here." Is it? It says that according to the National Endowment for the Arts, fewer than half of all adults read a book of any kind back in 2022, and it's not getting any better now. This decline is happening across age groups, gender, and education levels. And I got to admit, I read far less now since social media has completely taken up my brain space. So this summer, I've committed to reading 3 books.
Wow.
I'm still on book number one. And it's mid-July. So that's how it's going. What do you guys read?
Well, but as a
Are
kid,
you
though, yes. Yeah.
We read so much for
I read a
work,
lot for
though.
This
exactly.
job.
See,
it's hard to do it
up.
Casually.
I look
it
forward
is.
To pleasure reading.
Right.
As a kid, I went to these places called the library.
Yes.
And had a library card.
We
used to check out libraries.
I still have a library
check
card.
Out
of course.
So I'm a big, big, big reader.
Yeah, there is hope for the future, though. I love when I walk into my daughter's room and she's 16 and she's just sitting there reading a book. And I say, "What class is that for?" And she said, "It's not for a class." And it just warms my heart.
I gotta say, our daughter Mira, she's 7.5. She is plowing through Dork Diaries. That has inspired
me.
The
future's bright.
Yeah, the future is bright. We're gonna be okay, right?
We're gonna be okay.
We're gonna be all right.
So.
All right, Nate, you're up next.
All right, I'm up next. So my talk to the table is the Fanatics Fest. It is going down here in New York City.
So fun.
And Tom Brady has already launched Rob Gronkowski into a tank of Raising Cane's sauce.
What? Listen, I've been wanting to do this since the day I met you in 2010.
Yes!
I can still grow!
Grown men, just dudes being dudes. And I bet they'll be doing stuff like this to senior citizens.
Yes, I think
now,
so.
Now, what stands out to me is not just the stud, it's the connection. You know, I'll be rocking the mic there all weekend. It's my first time going to Fanatics Fest.
Oh, awesome.
Shout out to Michael Rubin.
Yes.
He has built something special.
Yes, he
It's
has.
One of the few places where fans and athletes can really connect face to face. And you realize that it's not just about the games when it comes to sports. You know, it's about the memories, the relationships, the passion that it brings, and it brings everybody together. You know, I met one guy, his name was Daniel, and he said, "You're my favorite player." And I'm always struck by that because I think of all the great players I played with. Uh-huh. And I'm like, "Yeah, right." So as he starts reaching for his phone, he's shaking and he shows me this custom-made Burleson sweater that they don't sell. He had it made somewhere.
He had that made.
Yeah.
He had it made.
And, he's a fairly young guy, so I can only imagine at some point he fell in love with football, saw me as he was living in Michigan.
Yeah.
He was probably in elementary school or middle school, and he's like, "That's my favorite player." And when he told me,
It just warmed my heart.
That had to make you feel
good. Oh, my gosh. It makes me feel so
good.
But
that is what sports does. And you're right about shout out to Michael Rubin. It just, he keeps topping himself with the events that he puts on. And he said, this one is going to be even bigger and better. The fans get to get up close and personal to their sports legends.
Yeah.
It's a great event.
Yeah.
These in-person gatherings, they really bring them back.
It's so cool.
Every single time.
My advice to players, just give a little bit of time to your fans, man. I know sometimes you're stressed and you're on your way to something else, but just stop. Give them 5 to 10 seconds. It means the world to them.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I'm doing a panel there later today, too.
Oh, nice.
I'll see you over there.
I'll see you over there. All right.
Possibly the most anticipated movie of the year is out in theaters now. I'm talking about The Odyssey, Christopher Nolan's retelling of Homer's classic poem of a man's journey home from war. It has everything: action, romance, mythical beasts, and Greek gods. We sat down with two of the film's stars, Anne Hathaway and Matt Damon, to find out why the filming of the movie was also an incredible adventure.
Christopher Nolan's take on The Odyssey is so large scale that the epic visuals match the epic story. Battles against monsters, man, the gods, and of course, Homer's Trojan horse that you may remember from school.
I read The Odyssey in high school. Did you guys also?
Yeah, everybody.
I actually didn't read it in high school. I read it right after because my dad just decided one summer that I'm going to read it. And I'm like, that seems like a good thing to do with your summer. I'm a nerd.
Help me go home.
Matt Damon stars as Odysseus, the Greek hero who spends 20 years trying to get back to his loyal wife, Penelope, played by Anne Hathaway.
Ithaca's king is coming back.
No, he's not.
How did you get to your interpretation of Penelope? Because she's not passively waiting.
Honestly, all credit to Chris. It was there in the writing. Penelope is a highborn girl. She's not struggled in her life the way a lot of people struggle. I look at it in terms of how it relates to me in the modern world, and I have privileges that I was born with. And yet, I know that in order for me to get where I want to go, there has to be a fight there. There has to be an edge. I may have to use my elbows and my teeth.
Penelope cleverly defends her palace from angry suitors trying to take Odysseus's place.
Bringing it all.
Before Odysseus goes away, there's a scene where you guys are together and you are so connected, you're so bonded, it's palpable. And I know it's acting, but how did you guys get there?
Well, great script, great director, great scene, and I think relatable for both of us because we're kind of both in that marriage independent of one another. And so,
in that true love marriage?
Yeah, well,
I
don't want to be.
Mine,
I know,
but
I don't
want to
be.
This is the third time the actors have worked with Oscar-winning director Christopher Nolan. They were both in Interstellar. Damon was also in Oppenheimer, and Hathaway in The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh my gosh, during Dark Knight Rises, the greatest fear I had was making a mistake in front of Chris. Getting a line wrong or just, you know, dropping a take. And this time, I didn't have that pressure. I knew that what we were doing was we were telling a story about human beings. And the best thing I could do was just trust him and be a human being. And sometimes not falling apart because it wasn't perfect, but actually trusting that it was falling apart for a reason.
Bringing this story to life was an odyssey of its own, with thousands of extras across 6 different countries, from Italy to Iceland, and some locations inaccessible by road.
How intense did it get?
Well, it was the hardest movie, definitely, that I've ever done. It felt, in a lot of ways, more like an expedition than a movie because of the locations we were at. You know, we'd be shooting on top of a mountain. We'd have to hike up the mountain to shoot. And that part of it ended up being really fun because it was challenging for everybody there.
Another challenge, this is the first feature film ever shot entirely with IMAX cameras, which are so big that mirrors had to be used so actors could see each other around the bulky equipment.
This is literally an ancient story. Why does it still need to be told today?
Well, I'm not sure we've learned Zeus's law yet. You know, treat others as you would be treated. It's a very simple concept, but I think that what the original story explores and what the film explores is what happens when we don't live by that code.
Every subsequent generation that's encountered the story has found it to be relevant. And depending on where you are in your own life, I think you get different things out of it.
So
if we bring this back to 2026 for a moment, and if you had a friend who was waiting 20 years for her man to come back, what would you tell her?
In the modern age?
Gosh.
That's like 2 weeks.
I mean, okay, there's a lot of translating we have to do. Like, because I'd be like, because Odysseus can't text.
Right, I was going to say.
If you don't
and he hasn't texted.
I'm just going to say, if you don't get a text in 20 years, he's maybe not that into you.
But maybe read the room.
Yeah.
But when you find the one, you wait. You wait. It was so incredible. I mean, I know you've seen the movie, right,
Kate? Yes. I've actually seen it twice.
You've seen it twice?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes. Lucky.
Because I had to see it ahead of time to interview Chris Nolan and then get to the premiere. It's going to sweep everything. Everything.
Have you ever seen so many A-listers in a single movie?
Stacked.
Zendaya, Lupita Nyong'o, Tom Holland. But there was really a great moment in the interview. I didn't want to leave without asking Matt Damon about another prominent person that he went to college with who we interviewed. I'm asking him this question now. I'm not going to tell you right now. We reveal all on social media and also tomorrow on CBS Saturday morning. But his reaction there was amazing.
Look at you with a tease.
Tune in. We'll be watching.
But I like how they both said, Matt said it's the hardest thing he's ever done, but the best thing he's ever done.
Yes.
And they said the brilliance and the genius of Chris Nolan. Robert Pattinson says, you know, most time the camp is maybe 5 minutes away. For Chris Nolan, it was 45 minutes away, and you had to walk in flip-flops and sandals to get there.
What do you have to say to people to say, I'll wait to watch it? I don't need to see it in IMAX.
You have to watch it in IMAX.
Yeah, no, it I am. To.
So,
I will.
So powerful.
Great questions, Adriana, by the way.
Yes. Thank you. They were so wonderful. The Odyssey, as you know, is in theaters today. Tune in Monday for Gail's conversation with the director, Christopher Nolan. Yes.
Can't wait for that.
Couple of things to look forward to this weekend, starting with tomorrow's CBS Saturday Morning. Robert Mondavi is a pioneer in the California wine business. His winery put Napa on the map 60 years ago. We will get a firsthand look at Mondavi's new $200 million transformation. Then on CBS Sunday Morning, country music icon. She is an icon. Shania Twain sits down with Seth Doan. She discusses her very personal new album, Little Miss Twain, and talks about overcoming setbacks and finding peace in her 60s.
Yeah, she has had some setbacks, but she has come out on the other side. And Friday, it's a release of The Odyssey. I can't wait for all you
I'm
guys.
I'm going to see it.
Up your alley.
I can't wait.
You cannot wait.
So excited. Wait. Did you have fun, Jolene?
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Of course.
So nice.
That will do it for us. See you Monday.
Have a great weekend.